When people ask me where I live, I tell them, usually I just say the Shoals, Alabama. If most people are familiar with Muscle Shoals, and that's kind of the northwest corner of the state of Alabama. And technically, like Wayne said, I live in a little community called Killen, Alabama. And if you're a college football fan, you got to see 3.5 hours of Texas A&M killing Alabama last night. And so I'm sorry that I can't be with my people today and preach from the book of Lamentations for them, because I'm sure they need that this morning. But technically, I don't live in Killen. That is my zip code, but I actually live in a little community. It's called Center Star, but it really is known as Frog Pond. Where I live, everybody calls it Frog Pond, and you can guess why. It used to be a frog pond. And with all the we got 10 inches of rain on Monday and Tuesday of this week, and so it is literally a frog pond again right now. But that's where I live now. But I'm actually from Tennessee. I'm from Pulaski, Tennessee, southern middle Tennessee. And these beautiful mountains here that y'all get to see every day, I live in the foothills of those. If you look on a map, Appalachia ends in my hometown. It ends in Giles County, Tennessee, which is where I'm from. And y'all have made me feel very at home already. You may not even realize. I got to the hotel. Thank y'all for the accommodations. It's always great to have a hot shower and a warm bed and free coffee. That's my favorite part about being in a hotel, is all the free coffee you want. You don't even have to make it. You just go down there and fill your cup up. And then Wayne brought over a basket last night of goodies, full of Sprite and water, and got a pair of socks. My wife's already laid claim to that pair of socks, though, when I sent her a picture of it. And you taking care of me, just like my house, 3 boxes of Little Debbie's. That, you know, I feel like home. And as if I didn't feel home enough, I get in the car this morning to head over here. I turn on the radio, and I kid you not, the first song that comes on the radio was Dolly Parton's Mule Skinner Blues. And I was like, this is home. I mean, I just feel like I'm at home, because that's the kind of stuff you would hear if you were hanging around my house. I said that my people, because of football, are lamenting this morning because of Alabama getting beaten. I want to talk about that a little bit, not college football, but about the difference between joy and happiness. We often use those words interchangeably, and admittedly, there is a sense in which they are synonyms. But if we're talking about the way the words are used biblically, those they have very different meanings. Happiness is fickle. Happiness is up and down. Happiness is like watching the stock market. It's up today, it's down tomorrow, it's up today, down tomorrow. And that football game yesterday was a perfect example. And I'm sure maybe some of y'all are football fans as well. And that's a good description of what happiness is like. Happiness is like a surface emotion that is very volatile. Circumstances are constantly changing happiness. For example, if you're watching a football game and your team is winning, and it comes down to the last few seconds and they line up, the other team lines up to kick a field goal, and you're happy because you're going to win the game in 5 seconds. And then you see the ball up in the air and it goes to the uprights, and guess what? That quick, you're not happy anymore, are you? Now you're sad. Now you're mad. Now you're in a bad mood. But wait a minute, there's a flag on the play, and they're bringing it back. Hold on, it didn't count. They got to do it again. Now you're happy again because we hadn't lost yet. We might still win this thing. And so they move them back 5 yards, and they kick it again, and it goes through again, and guess what? Now you're not happy again. Isn't that a pretty good description of happiness? It's here, and then it's gone. It's constantly being affected and shaped by circumstances. That is not joy at all. In fact, I'll just tell you right up front that our premise for this whole series this week, our thesis statement, if I was writing a paper for school, this would be my thesis statement. And I intend to prove it to you this week from the book of Philippians. Joy has nothing to do with your circumstances. Nothing whatsoever to do with your circumstances. Now, I will admit that is a tall order to convince somebody. But I believe the book of Philippians will prove it to us without a doubt. Joy is not affected by circumstances. We'll talk a little bit more about joy in that way in just a few minutes. But one of my greatest joys, personally, over 25 years, has been leading singing at Vacation Bible School. I love it because the kids are always so enthusiastic. And that's one of the reasons that I love leading VBS songs, is because the kids just, they go all in. There's no I've never heard half-hearted singing from kids at VBS. Now, I've heard half-hearted singing from adults in worship many times. You ever been in that setting? Where the song is just dragging so bad you feel like you need to pick it up and help carry it forward because there's just no zeal. There's just no emotion. There's no enthusiasm. Kids are not like that in VBS. And without a doubt, one of the favorite songs of VBS is I've Got the Joy, 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 Joy Down in My Heart. I'm glad you started with that, and I'm glad I heard some people go, where? Because that's part of the song. You know, the kids buy in. I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. And when kids sing that, I believe them. When we grown up sing it, I don't always believe us. In fact, I think if we were going to write a more accurate depiction of the song, we might sing something like, I've got the anxiety, anxiety, anxiety down in my heart. I've got the fear, 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 fear down in my heart. Anger, dread, frustration down in my heart to stay. Now, when I say that, let me qualify that statement with this statement. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm not even saying it's bad. In fact, I would say it's natural. It's natural that we humans experience all of these different emotions. And those emotions are not wrong. God didn't create us with bad emotions. All our emotions have a purpose. They have a value. They have a reason. But just because they're gifts of God, it doesn't mean that those gifts can't be turned into curses if they're not used properly. And even though we might understand that anxiety and fear and dread and anger and frustration and whatever negative emotion you want to attach, even though we know that these are all natural, normal emotions, I think we would be in agreement in saying we don't want any of those things down in our heart to stay. It's okay that I experience those emotions, but I want them to be more like happiness. They're on the surface. They're things that I experience in the moment because of the circumstances, but that's okay because I know how to deal with them and process them and then continue on. I don't want them taking root in my heart. I don't want them becoming defining characteristics. It's okay that those things are emotions. I don't want those things to be characteristics. And so what we're going to try to do this week, and especially even this morning in the worship hour, is talk a little bit about how we can actually cultivate joy in our lives. Like what are some things that we do? I'm a big proponent of whenever we're teaching the Bible, not just to teach information, but to give us application. And I know Wayne remembers this. We had a teacher in school named Billy Bland, and he used to use this expression all the time. He would say that when you get up and you teach from the Scriptures, that your sermon needs to have a handle on it. And what he meant by that was, people, when they leave, need to be able to pick it up and take it with them, what you've said, what you've talked about. It doesn't just need to be something that passes our time for half an hour, something that entertains us, something that makes us think a little bit, and then we walk out the door and it's just kind of gone. And it's like, well, that was a good sermon this morning, but it doesn't really have any application or changing of my life. It doesn't really make my life any different in any way. And so we want to make sure that we have application. Now, we had another instructor by the name of Keith Mosier, and he did something different. When you got up and preached a sermon, if it didn't have handles on it, he would just go, so what? You get critiqued in chapel at preaching school. So after you get up and talk, then the instructor gets up with literally a sheet of paper with every mispronounced word. Guys, listen, they went through entire pencils when they were trying to mark mine. Because being from southern Middle Tennessee, I mess a lot of words up. I don't say ing on anything. And so I was always getting corrected for fixing and doing and saying and being and living and talking and stuff like that. But his point was, so what? Okay, what you said was true. Maybe what you said was even entertaining. Maybe it was interesting. So what? What does it matter was the point that he was making. And he was trying to drive home to us that when we talk about Scripture, we need to take that one extra step of application. Now, when I go to work tomorrow, when I go to school tomorrow, when I leave this building and I'm not surrounded by God's people, and I haven't spent time in prayer and lifting up God in worship and dwelling in the presence of Jesus at the table, I don't have all of that on Monday morning. I don't have all of that on a Thursday afternoon. So how do I maintain my focus? How do I live out these things in those scenarios? And so if you can bear with me in the second hour this morning, worship hour, we're going to look at some specific things that we can do to cultivate joy. Now, I want to say this as a disclaimer right up front. I'm going to hit hard on some of these ideas about anxiety and fear and stress and dread and worry and anger and all of those things. But I do not want you to take that what I'm saying. I do not want you to take what I'm saying as a criticism of you as an individual if you are wrestling with or struggling with those emotions. That is not what I'm saying at all. Now, I'm not going to take the time to say that little caveat every time I talk about these things. So I'm saying it right now up front because I want you to remember that I'm not doing that. Because the last thing someone who is wrestling with anxiety needs is to be made to feel that somehow because they wrestle with anxiety that their faith is not sufficient or their Christianity is not legitimate or their commitment to God is not sincere. I am saying none of those things. I'm saying these things are realities, and with some people, they're realities more than others, whereas one person might wrestle with anxiety, another person might wrestle with anger. But I would say that both people, if in an honest moment, would say, I don't want to be any of those things, but I don't know how not to be. A lot of times when we look at Philippians 4 and it says, be anxious for nothing, I know a lot of people that read that verse and their heart just sinks even deeper into anxiety. Because they go, well, the Bible says be anxious for nothing. And I'm an anxious person. And so I don't know how to not be an anxious person. I mean, believe me, I don't know people who struggle with anxiety who want to be like that. They go to great lengths to try to not be like that. And then they read that verse in their Bible without any explanation or any context or any application, and they go, well, I guess this means that there's something deficient in my faith. And I want to suggest to you that is not the case. And I hope if you could stick it out through the whole week, that you'll get to the end of our study and go, you know what? I will be okay. I do have some things that I can do that would help. And God will walk right beside me every step of the way. Now, I'm not going to promise you that at the end, I wish this was the case. I'd be a millionaire if I could promise this. Like I said, I'll go and I'll deliver this series of lessons and I will cure your anxiety. I'm not saying that. I'm just hopefully going to give you something you can hold on to in the moments when it seems to be overwhelming. That's all. And you know, sometimes that's all God asks us to do, is just hold on. Just hold on. Think about 1 Corinthians 15. What does Paul say? Be steadfast. And what does he say next? Unmovable. Always abounding in the work of the Lord. Sometimes we just need to dig in and hang on and not move. One of my favorite quotes says, sometimes God stills the storms that are raging in the lives of his children. And sometimes God lets the storms rage and he stills his children. In other words, hey, the storm ain't going away. Drop anchor. Hang on. We'll get through this. Now, joy, 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 joy down in my heart. That's a VBS song. And for whatever reason, I think I know why, we don't usually sing those songs on Sunday mornings. There's a certain category of songs these are VBS songs. And I think it's because, you know, we would say, well, they're kind of childish, they're kind of immature, silly, goofy, funny, you know. And that's why we grown-ups don't sing these like on Sundays. It's reserved for this special time for children. And I would say this, yes, some of those songs are childish, but all childish means is in the manner of a child. And I do recall reading somewhere that if I want to enter into the kingdom of heaven, I have to become like a little child. And another thing to consider is in our assemblies, we have children in our assemblies, don't we? And sometimes we need to speak to them on their level where they can understand. And maybe that's true for us adults too. Does anybody honestly know what night with ebon pinion brooded o'er the veil even means? It has something to do with the Lord's Supper, I guess. I don't even really know what it means. So sometimes even the songs we sing, they're over my head. It's okay that we, quote unquote, and I don't like this phrase, dumb it down for children. Because even these songs, even though they're silly and goofy and fun and all that, if you will look at the message of these songs, they teach very deep, serious spiritual truths. There's great theology in some of those Vacation Bible School songs. And this is one of them. I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart, down in my heart to stay. This is how theologically deep that song is. That is also the theme of the book of Philippians. An entire book of the Bible is dedicated to that very message. Now, I know when Paul wrote the book of Philippians, he didn't write it with chapters and verses. But if you use that kind of as your parameters, there's four chapters in the book of Philippians. And depending on what translation you're using, there's at least 16 times in those four chapters that joy or rejoice or rejoicing or some variation of that word is used. So essentially, on every page of this letter, Paul is using some variation of the word joy four times. This letter is baptized in joy. Chapter 4 and verse 4 is usually considered the key verse. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think Philippians 2, in the middle, the part about let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, I think that's really the message of the book. That's the heartbeat, if you will. Everything is framed around that context. But second to that would be definitely Philippians 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. You've probably heard this before. When Bible writers want to emphasize something, they repeat it. Not just Bible writers. We do that too, don't we? You ever repeat something to your children? Or in my case, does your spouse ever repeat anything to you to make sure that you, hey, this is important. I need you to hear this. Put down the phone. Pause the game. Turn down the radio. I'm trying to tell you something really important that I need you to remember. I don't want you to forget this. This is really important, so I'm going to repeat it again. Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. That's how they emphasize something. That's how they make a point. Hey, this is really important. This is a big deal. You really need to focus on that. And so joy is the heart of this letter. It's the blood of the letter. Let this mind be in you which is in Christ is the heart of the letter. Joy is the blood, the lifeblood that flows throughout the letter. That's why we're going to study the book of Philippians this week. Here's the funny thing about us grown-ups. When you think about being a child, I don't know if you're, and I understand, look, everybody has different experiences. Some people have childhoods that they don't want to remember, and I understand that. I understand that. So we're not going to go there, though. But I think a lot of us, when we think about our childhood, we think about how great, we always think that things were better when we were young, right? We think about how, am I the only one, Coca-Cola doesn't taste as good now as it did when I was 8 years old. Anybody else feel that way? Do you find yourself griping about Sonic changing things? Now, I have no idea. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I don't know. But I've reached a stage in my life where I'm always griping about things that are changing. I like the way things were. And I remember my wife and I were talking the other day. We were driving. I don't know why it came up. But I said, hey, do you remember, and I don't know if this is true around here, but where I grew up, I said, do you remember when Sonic used to have those little plastic things with animals on them they would stick? Okay, so some of you remember that. And I said, when did they stop doing that? And why did they stop doing it? I loved that when I was a little kid. And I used to keep them. As silly as it was, these little plastic things they'd stick into a chili dog, I would keep them because I wanted to get all the different animals. But a lot of times when we think about our childhood, we think about how things were good then, and we wish things were like they were back then. Usually we call that the good old days. We always think about, there's some imaginary time in all of our, and that's the funny thing, for each generation that's different. But we all have this time that we call the good old days. And I wonder if it's the case that really there's no difference from one generation to the next. It's more perception. I heard somebody say this recently, the good old days have more to do with a bad memory than actually how things used to be. In other words, we forget the bad stuff and we just remember the things that we loved. We kind of filter out the stuff that doesn't fit our narrative. But yes, granted, there are a lot of things that children aren't aware of. Their world is small, or it used to be. I think that may be changing now because of technology. But it used to be children's, their world was very small. And as we get older, our world gets bigger. And as that world gets bigger, more problems begin to bleed into our world that just simply didn't exist when we were younger. I want to suggest something to you. One of the reasons why an adult VBS song would be, I've got the fear, I've got the dread, I've got the anxiety, I've got the anger, I've got the frustration, I've got the anxiety, whatever it is, down in my heart. I would suggest to you that one of the reasons is because we listen to the wrong voices. The last 200 years of human history worldwide, in virtually every measurable negative category, we have improved. Now, what are you talking about? I'm talking about illiteracy. I'm talking about famine. I'm talking about poverty. I'm talking about war. I'm talking about access to clean drinking water, to health care. I mean, when I'm talking about these negative categories, just think of all the things that you think of that are bad and wrong in the world. And in the last 200 years of human history, virtually every single one of those categories has improved, not just some, but radically, completely, significantly improved. I'll just give you a couple of examples. One example would be great. 200 years ago, 90% of the world, and I want you to think, soak that up for a minute. 90%, that's for every 10 people, 9 people. 90% of the entire world, just 200 years ago, 90% of the entire planet lived in famine-level poverty. 90% of the world. That means almost everybody you know, almost everybody in this room, with just a couple of exceptions, 90% of the world lived in famine-level poverty 200 years ago. Now here's the amazing thing. 200 years later, today, that number has literally flipped. Less than 10% of the world lives in famine-level poverty today. When was the last time you picked up a newspaper or turned on the television and you saw this headline? Yesterday, 137,000 people escaped famine-level poverty. Have you ever seen that headline? I hadn't either. And yet it's true. Statistically speaking, every day 137,000 people escape famine-level poverty. And they have every day for the last 30 years to the tune of 1 billion people in less than my lifetime. Is that good news? If we don't think it's good news, it's only because we've never existed in famine-level poverty. Now, you can go to places where you've seen it. I've been in countries where I've seen it firsthand. Maybe with our proximity to Appalachia, there are still places, and maybe not so long ago that was a reality. I'm telling you, in 30 years, 1 billion people have escaped famine-level poverty. That's pretty good news, and I've never seen that on any news story. They could say it every single day, but what do we get every single day? Bad news, right? Bad news sells. What's the old mantra? If it bleeds, it leads. You see, nobody ever puts on the news or in the paper good news about all the wonderful things that have happened and how we have literally, if you looked at a graph of human suffering and our ability, I'm going the other way. If you take human suffering at its all-time peak, and over the last 200 years, and especially in the last 50 years, it has steadily declined in every measurable category. We have literally changed the world for the good. Now here's a strange, interesting fact that goes with it. During the same time period that all of this negative has gone down steadily, the perception of how bad things are has steadily been rising and is at an all-time high. Have you heard this lately? We are more divided than at any time since the Civil War. I heard it in the 60s too. I mean, I wasn't alive, but I've read the history. I heard it in the 30s too, during the Great Depression. I wasn't alive, but I've read the history. You can literally go back and read newspaper articles from all of these time periods. It's the beauty of the internet. If you want to research, you can get all the information you want. It's out there. I heard somebody even say recently, we're more divided than that. I said, really? More divided than the Civil? More divided than when brother took up arms against brother and our country literally was violently killing each other. We're more divided. Really? We're more divided than that. The only wars that we're in right now are Facebook wars. You know, shouting at TVs. Listen, I'm not saying any of that stuff is good. And I'm not saying that we might be trending in the wrong direction. But I'm just saying, that's a little hyperbolic to say we're more divided than even in the Civil War. Why would we think crazy things like that? Why is our perception of how bad things are in the world getting bigger when the reality of how good things are is improving? The problems are declining. Why is there that perception? You can trace it to a very specific point in time in history, and it begins to escalate with the rise of media. Remember the point that I'm making. Are we listening to the wrong voices? And I want to suggest to you, this is biblical because they faced it in their day as well. In 2 Peter chapter 3, Peter warns his audience to be careful not to listen, the King James uses this word, to scoffers. And that's one of those words that you can almost see the visual with the word. Scoff. You know, it's like, ah, you can see the pessimism in it, the negativity in it. Now, in that context, they're saying, where's the promise of your Lord's coming? Didn't your Lord say he was... You follow Jesus, right? Didn't he say he was coming again? Well, by the time Peter wrote that letter, 3 decades had passed. And they're like, well, where is he? And they said, you know what? Everything has continued as it has since the beginning, since creation. Of course, Peter says, yeah, they're overlooking a real big fact that everything hasn't continued as it was since creation. Namely, what about this story of the flood where God brought judgment upon a world that had completely rebelled against him? And they're ignorant of that fact. It was willful ignorance. Because he said there was evidence of it, but they chose to ignore it. You catch that? They chose to ignore it. He says, for of this they are willfully ignorant. Now, ignorance is not a bad thing. Ignorance just means that you don't know something. That's all the word literally means, to not know. And we are all ignorant of an unlimited number of things. There's so many things that we're ignorant about. Now, the danger is oftentimes we're ignorant and we think we're experts. You know what the definition of arrogance is? Ignorance plus confidence. We think we know things that we don't know. Ignorant, though, is something that all of us deal with. Willful ignorance is a different thing. Willful ignorance is, I could know different, but I choose to ignore the evidence. Now, in his context, he's talking about a global flood, and he says, of this, they are willfully ignorant. I'll give you the perfect picture of willful ignorance. If you were of a certain generation, you'll know what I'm talking about. Any of y'all remember Baghdad Bob from the first Desert Storm? Do y'all remember him? He was the Iraqi information minister. His job is to get on, you know, stand behind the podium, get in front of the cameras, and spew, you know, propaganda for Saddam Hussein to the world media. Now, I won't ever forget, I was actually in high school when Desert Storm took place, and my world history class literally was my teacher bringing in a TV, plugging it into CNN, and us watching Desert Storm on TV. He was like, hey, you're witnessing world history happening right now. Let's watch it. And so then we'd talk about it. But I remember Baghdad Bob, and they did this one thing on CNN where there was a split screen, okay? And on the one side, there's Baghdad Bob, and he's standing, he's in his uniform, and he's got these officials behind him, and he's standing in front of this podium, and he's talking, and he's saying, this is what he's saying to the media. The infidels are killing themselves in the desert. They are throwing down their weapons at the borders of Iraq, of Baghdad. Now, while he's saying this, CNN is showing a split screen, kid you not, literally, of U.S. soldiers pulling down the statue of Saddam Hussein in Baghdad. I want to ask you a question. Do you think that Baghdad Bob didn't know that was happening? You think that he didn't know that the city of Baghdad had already fallen? Of course he knew. So why was he on TV saying all this other stuff? Why was he saying the exact opposite? willful ignorance. It's kind of like a child. You ever played hide and seek with a kid? If you play hide and seek with a kid, they think if they can't see you, you can't see them, right? You ever seen a kid stand over in the corner and get behind a sheer curtain? You can't find me. You can't see me. Okay, it's childish, yes. But when adults do it, it's willful ignorance. And it's not a good look on us. And so Peter tells his audience, rather than listening to these people who are being willful, who are choosing to ignore the evidence, right before he says that, he said, we have for us, we have a faithful testimony. The words of the prophets and of Jesus and of his apostles. We would call that our Bible. The Old Testament, the words of the prophets. The Gospels, the words of Jesus. The remainder of the New Testament, the words of the apostles. And so he's telling his audience, in the face of these people who are willfully ignorant of the truth, don't listen to those voices. Instead, listen to the voices of your Scripture, of God's holy prophets, of His Son Jesus, and of His apostles. Listen to that, not this. And I would suggest to you that one of the first steps towards cultivating joy is learning what voices to tune out and what voices to turn up. Ever since media has entered in, and I realize that's a big word. I mean, media technically could go back to the days when the town crier would ride in on a horse, he'd blow the horn, hear ye, and he unrolls the scroll and reads it aloud in the town square. That's media. Of course, it grew with the invention of newspapers, and then radio, and then television, and then cable news, and then social media. Now, we literally are swimming in the waters of media at all times. And understand something. The media is never your friend. Because it's a business. And businesses exist for one reason, don't they? To provide a service that makes money. So no, they're not going to tell us all the good news that there is out there. They're going to tell us what will make us angry, what will make us scared, what will divide us, what will frustrate us, what will give us anxiety, because that's the stuff that gets a reaction out of us. And when we click, when we turn on, when we turn up, then that's money in the bank. So what I'm going to suggest that we do this week is we tune that mess out and we tune into this. We often talk about the gospel. Don't ever forget what the gospel is. The word literally means good news. What is the good news? That in this world of rebellion and suffering, God entered into it in His Son Jesus and transformed it. All of those things that we're talking about, all of those improvements that have gone on, all of the good that has come, it was born of Jesus, the Son of God, coming into this world and saying, I'm going to show you a different way. I'm going to show you a way that will be different. It's not like you've never seen it before. You've never heard it before. There's no kingdom on earth that has preached this message that I'm going to preach to you, but I'm telling you, this is the will and the wisdom of God. And so the prophets alluded to it, Jesus introduced it, and His apostles are continually reminding us of it through their writings. And so that's what I'm going to ask you to do this week. Turn down the voices that are causing the anxiety and the fear and the frustration and the dread and the fill in the blank. And turn up the voices that are bringing the good news. Turn up the voices that tell you, you can rejoice always. Not just on good days. Not just when things go your way. Always. Because joy has nothing to do with circumstances. I grew up on a little place called Chicken Creek. And on Chicken Creek, we literally have a creek there called Chicken Creek. But Chicken Creek is, it doesn't flow all the time. It depends on the time of year. In the summertime, when it gets really, really hot and really, really dry, Chicken Creek will get so shallow, I mean, you couldn't baptize a frog in it. I mean, there's just not much water there. I was at my daddy's house on Chicken Creek yesterday before I came up here, and just a day or two before, so much rain had come down rolling off those hills. I told you we live in the foothills of the Appalachians. So much water had run off those foothills that the creek was out of its banks and flowing all over Daddy's yard, and it's literally surrounded our house before when we lived there. I want to suggest something to you. The difference between happiness and joy is the difference between a creek that fills up when it rains and dries out when it dries, and a spring. Because, see, also on Chicken Creek, there's a spring. Up on the hill behind our house, there's a spring. My grandparents, when they lived there, they never had city water. All the water in their house was fed from a gravity flow off of that spring. And that spring has never gone dry. It's never gone dry. The creek has gone dry many times. The spring has never gone dry. That's the difference in joy and happiness. Happiness is like when it rains and it fills up the creek, and then it stops raining and it dries out, and then the creek dries up. Joy refers to a deep-seated contentment of the soul. It's not a surface emotion. It's something from, to borrow the line from the song, deep down in my heart. And so, yeah, weather changes. Sometimes it gets hot, sometimes it gets dry. Hey, spring keeps flowing. It's what Jesus was talking to the woman at the well about in John 4. He said, you know what? I have water that I can offer you that you will never be thirsty again. She said, I want that because I'm tired of having to come out here every day and fill these jugs up from this well. I want water that'll ever flow. Now, she was misunderstanding what he was talking about because he was talking about the water of life. But he says it will be springing up from within you, from deep down in your heart. And he says, and I'm the only one who can give that to you. You can't find it anywhere else. Happiness, you can find happiness. My wife, all she has to do is go to Target. She's happy. She's having a bad day. Let's go to Target. Go to Target. Go to Starbucks. She's happy. We can find happiness anywhere and everywhere. Happiness is easy to come by. But happiness doesn't last. Happiness is like a puddle. When it rains, it'll fill up. When it stops raining, it'll dry up. That's happiness. Joy is like a spring that never stops flowing no matter what is happening around you, in you, or to you. Wouldn't you rather have that? Wouldn't you rather have something that could sustain you in those moments? Because listen, I don't have to tell you, you've lived long enough. Bad stuff happens. Bad things happen. And they hurt. And they will pull you down. I need something that will keep me afloat when all the happiness dries up. Now, I want to close with what I was saying just a moment ago. It's all about what we listen to. In Psalm 1, he says, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, or stands in the way of sinners, or sits in the seat of the scornful. But in contrast with that, he says, his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. And he says, this is what that man will be like. He'll be like a tree that is planted by a river. You know what happens when you plant a tree by a river? The roots grow deep down into the earth, down into the bed of the river. And I'm not saying that a river can never, ever, ever dry up, but you know what? It's pretty rare that rivers dry up. He says, so a tree planted by a river, even in times of drought, it has roots that go down into this ever-flowing source of water. And it says, and so it'll bear fruit. Its leaves will stay green year-round. In other words, it will not dry up in times of drought because it's tapping into something that is a flowing source. But he says, but the ungodly are not so. They're like the chaff that is driven with the wind. Dry husks that just get blown like tumbleweeds. And whichever way the wind is blowing, that's the direction they move in. That's the difference in happiness and joy. And the difference is who we listen to. If you think you're going to find joy anywhere other than right here, remember, rejoice in the Lord. There's a location for this joy. Rejoice in the Lord. If I plant my life in Christ, that's where the roots can get down to this river of life, this water of life, this wellspring that is constantly bubbling up. It's in Christ. And so if I root myself in Him and listen to His holy apostles and listen to Him and listen to His prophets, then I can stay green year-round, no matter what's happening out here. If I'm listening to those other voices, well, when things are good, I'll be good. When things are bad, I'll be bad. I'll be blown to and fro with the winds. That's what we're going to study this week. I truly believe this book can help us make our lives better and help us bring joy to the world. Thank you all for your time. Look forward to studying this great book with you this week.